Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Roger Morris, who served in the United States Foreign Service and on the senior staff of the National Security Council under both Presidents Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon until resigning over the invasion of Cambodia. His latest book, Between the Graves, is about the history of U.S.-Afghan relations and American policy in South Asia based on thousands of previously secret documents. He's also at work on a comparative history of the inner politics of the United States and Soviet Russia. Welcome to Background Briefing, Roger Morris.
Thank you, Ian.
And the conversation I just had with David Rothkopf in many ways was about whether or not the Republic will survive the Empire. And also in the context of this year's election, which is more and more appears like a merger between a casino and a circus with billionaire ringmasters offering competing clown shows. This couldn't be, I think, more of a dire disconnect than the challenges that we face and the quality of the people who are offering themselves up as leaders.
Well, I think the comparison is apt. I would suggest that most Las Vegas casinos have more sophisticated clown shows than this Republican primary has been. I think you're absolutely right that it's a countdown between the extinction of the Republic and at least some control of the empire. The two obviously are utterly incompatible. Much of the Republic is of course a casualty to the way we've organized our domestic politics, as your previous guest pointed out. The system has triumphed. On the other hand, it could not be sustained and would not be as abusive without this foreign policy of imperial overreach.
So, do you think there's a chance, though, of a real debate in this country of this phony patriotism that is to do with, you know, wrapping ourselves in the flag, supporting our troops, but not questioning what in God's name we're doing out there in the world, and all of this America First stuff, when America is not first in most of the indicators of a wealthy, civilized, livable country. We're in many by many indexes, we are going down and down.
You know, I think it's easy to be very, very pessimistic about what we face and what we're seeing now as the manifestation of the political system. I would just salvage, I think, two somewhat more hopeful developments in answer to your question, Ian. First, I think there has been on the right a reaction in the more responsible intellectual circles of American conservatism against this spectacle, against the sheer demagoguery, even against the outlandish tyranny of money in the process, and the sheer know-nothing quality of the candidates for the Republican nomination, an insult to the history of that party, even at its worst. And I think that one finds among the more responsible, the more traditional conservative commentators a pull back and a push back from that, which conceivably might lead to a somewhat more responsible dialogue in the wake of what I think is going to be a rather ignominious defeat in this presidential election. The second, and I think even more encouraging development, is that we do have potentially here a different Barack Obama in his second term. It's not likely, I don't regard it as probable, but at least it's possible that for the first time in his life, relieved of the imperatives of ambition and advance and concession and accommodation, which have been, of course, his MO throughout his life. Relieved of that, it's conceivable that he could become a more dynamic leader. And the leadership would have to begin, of course, not only with a more responsible domestic policy and surrounding himself with more mature and responsible advisors, but also a more responsible foreign policy. And he's going to be forced, back to our original topic here, he's going to be forced into a major reassessment of Afghanistan. And, of course, the looming problem of Iran after the election will be there, and that has the most dire implications. He will be, however, much more of a free agent at that point, at January 20th, 2013, than he is now. And that, at least, is some small reason to hope. But none of that, relieves us of the duty, I think, to mount and mobilize all the pressure possible, and a more sophisticated and targeted pressure than progressive forces have been capable of so far.
Well, Roger Morris, I'm not sure that on the Republican side there are any indications of moderation. I mean, Olympia Snow just quit the party because she could no longer work in it. There was no middle ground anymore. And Lugar, who's one of the more sensible senators, he's been forced to vote further and further to the right. They're all looking over their shoulder at the Tea Party radicals. It seems in many ways, I don't know whether you saw the HBO movie, but it seems in many ways that John McCain opened the door to a new Republican Party that Sarah Palin has ushered in, which is, you know, the party of people, you know, just like you and me, you know, where we're not voting for anymore for qualified people. We're voting for people that, you know, are just like us.
Well, I think this. I think you're absolutely right. I think the system is intact. What I was talking about really was the beginning, at least, of a small backlash in the intellectual dialogue, such as it is, the discourse of the Republican Party. But I think you're absolutely right. The political system, the congressional party, certainly is unchanged. The electoral party is worse than ever. I think you're right that the 2008 election opened the door to that, and certainly Palin's candidacy was historic in that sense. It really legitimized that awful know-nothing rump, which has always been there. They were there, of course, throughout the 30s and 40s and in the post-war period. They've never enjoyed more power. They've never been better financed, but I think we should be honest and say that they were also helped enormously by this administration, by the Obama bungling of the first 2 years, which led to the 2010 midterms, which gave us this incredibly regressive reactionary Congress. And I mean, this is a bipartisan atrocity, and their success is to some extent the product of the utter bankruptcy of the Democrats.
So, just turning to foreign policy, which is what we were supposed to talk about, but I find this very interesting. Nevertheless, the latest chapter of America's most recent foreign policy misadventures appears to be shining down in Afghanistan, but at the same time, more and more pressure is put on Obama to start a new war with Iran. You were mentioning a minute ago that if he gets reelected as of January, January the 21st, would not be, I assume, would not be beholden to AIPAC anymore and wouldn't have to be taunted by Netanyahu.
Well, I think that's right. Although, you know, he will be certainly looking at his place in history. The Israel lobby will still have enormous power to block him legislatively and to punish his posterity, as it were, to punish his legacy in a number of ways. I mean, it's going to be if he chooses to challenge them with that new independence, it's going to be a titanic battle. There's no question about that. But he will have a reelected Obama will have new independence, and I would assume that he may well have a majority in both houses of Congress. And if that's the case, a more solid majority in the Senate, which looks at least possible now for the first time in a while, and a recapture of the House, then he is a different political creature. But as I said, the world's not going to wait on him. The Israelis are certainly capable of doing something unilaterally, and their approach to all of this is quite irrational, self-destructive, but nonetheless, I'm afraid, quite dangerous.
So, what confidence do you have, though, that America is still operates on data and facts, and not ideology and ignorance, in the sense that you expect, I assume, and I'm reading into what you're saying, Roger Morris, is that the majority of the American voters and the independents will vote for the Democrats this time because they are appalled at the insanity on the Republican side.
It will be the classic lesser of evils election once again. But unless something really changes, Ian, I can't see any candidate on the Republican side. Certainly not Santorum and not Romney at his most revived, which is again hard to imagine. Really defeating Obama. Now, that doesn't mean it's not going to be a very, very close race in some of these so-called swing states.
You're talking about them picking up a bigger majority in the Senate and taking back the House.
Yeah.
That's going to require a kind of shift in the country. And I'm just wondering whether the country is whether we are on a trajectory towards more ignorance as opposed to less.
Well, I wanted to be a bit optimistic, since I'm always pretty doomsday with you. I think the odds are against that kind of positive development. Still, if you ask whether fear and ignorance will prevail, I would have to say at this point, yes, that's quite likely. You know, we have these parallel universes in the national dialogue, certainly in foreign policy, and the Iranian nuclear issue is a classic case of that, where the American intelligence community knows full well, or seems to be quite confident, as a dispatch in the New York Times this morning points out, that the Iranians had halted their nuclear program. There were some misgivings from intercept evidence and other sources that there might have been an attempt to restart it, but they're still banking very heavily on the fact that they have not resumed a weaponization program. There's that element of the national discourse, which of course is the official intelligence version. There's a public dialogue of former officials, retired military officers, et cetera, warning against a war with Iran, warning against acting on false intelligence. And then there is this other universe entirely, which operates in part at the behest of the Israel lobby, in part out of the sheer dementia and really militarism of the American right. And the utterly irresponsible positions of the Republican presidential candidates, all of course pandering for Jewish money and for the support of the Israel lobby. But this is going to be a very close run thing, and I don't know that unless Obama summons extraordinary courage, unlike any he has shown ever in his career, and extraordinary insight with new people around him, I don't think he's going to prevail.
So, Roger Morris, then, what do you think is going to happen vis-a-vis Iran as we shut down in Afghanistan? By the way, I spoke with a captain the other day who led had the highest casualty since Gettysburg, 80% casualties on the border with Pakistan and Afghanistan. He said that, after the battles, they would pick up the enemy's weapons, and they were all brand new, made in Iran weapons. So obviously Iran's having some schadenfreude at our expense, but they're also, basically keeping Assad going. According to these emails that have somebody hacked into the Assad emails, and it seems like the Iranians are you know, literally running the show there along with the Russians. So there's some dimensions of a kind of surrogate war going on there. And short of, I mean, if we were to strike Iran, of course, that would be a huge victory for Assad and the Russians. So is there any chance of any sort of deft foreign policy here on the part of the United States?
Well, I think there has to be obviously a major reassessment of what kind of Middle East balance of power we want. The Iranians are not doing, for that matter, anything very new here in terms of their covert war against the United States. They have been supplying weapons in Afghanistan. They're certainly behind Assad. They're very active now, we know, in the Yemen. In a covert action against the United States. I mean, that of course is an almost predictable outcome of having to limit their nuclear ambitions and their ambitions to be a regional power and to balance off the Israelis will not wane, will not disappear simply because they may give up for the time being their nuclear weapons program. So we can expect that challenge in covert ways, as well as other means, for some time to come. And I think, again, it depends on how Obama and the people around him define the American national interest in a new Middle East. And this Arab Spring, which we were so happy to see, which has turned into a rather chilly Arab winter, is going to drag on with uncertain consequences. We still have the Saudis to cope with at a number of levels. So this is a very, very complicated picture. It's probably more challenging in some respects than any American president has faced since World War II. And a second term for Obama is going to bring all of this right up to his doorstep almost right away.
Well, but what seems to be simple and straightforward about all of these is that there's a pretty universal desire on the part of the peoples of these countries, whether they're Iran or Syria or Egypt or really anywhere in the Middle East, for more freedom. And at the same time, there's also the ruthlessness of the dictatorships, whether they're the Saudi kings or the Assads or the mad mullahs in Tehran.
Well, I think we often make the mistake, of course, of an old-fashioned version of the domino theory that all of these countries are somehow the same, and that if Mubarak goes in Cairo, that the same thing is going to happen, or if Gaddafi is eventually overthrown in Libya, the same thing is going to happen in Syria or somewhere else. That, of course, is not the case. The system is very different. The societies and culture are very different. The array of power in Syria is much more complicated. The Alawis are a very powerful force in command of the army and have a huge economic and social tribal stake, really, in maintaining their power and a huge fear of what would follow any overthrow of that regime. So that's the systems, as you say, the systems of tyranny are proving much more resilient in this set of countries now that we're looking at. Even in Yemen, where that civil war has been going on for really a half century, I found it very ironic that the Iranians now, according to recent reports, have begun to arm and to train the Shia tribal forces in North Yemen. Those were our allies. We were covertly involved there, of course, against Nasser all the way back in the 1960s. John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson conducted that covert intervention. So the alliances shift, but the arenas stay very much the same.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Roger Morris.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Roger Morris, who served in the United States Foreign Service and on the senior staff of the National Security Council under both Presidents Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon until resigning over the invasion of Cambodia. His latest book, Between the Graves, is about the history of U.S.-Afghan relations and American policy in South Asia based on thousands of previously secret documents. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with UCLA Professor James Galvin about the apparent losing side, which is the Syrian National Army.
All time passing, where have all the amenities.